You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Attorney General Bill Barr finally appeared in front of the House Judiciary Committee, and oh my gosh, was there fireworks. The thing that really, really gets me about this, Ron, is I thought that he was there to testify. I thought he was there to answer questions, but none of the Democrats let him answer questions. They don't even let him speak. They just make a lot of accusations, which were insulting. I mean, extremely insulting. Especially, you know, at the opening when Jerry Nadler said that Bill Barr was acting in a way to help Trump get reelected, and he never let Barr answer anything. You know, he just kept throwing these accusations out so that people could hear them, and they were all just false, crazy accusations. And when William Barr tried to respond, he wasn't given the opportunity to do so. I was very frustrated as an American citizen listening to that. I think not only was it very, very unfair to our Attorney General, but I think it was very unfair to us, the American people, because I wanted to hear the answers. And when he, you know, then when a Republican would come up and interview him, he did get a chance to answer things, but you know, he'd have to use the time to go back and answer what the Democrats said as well. I just thought it was really, really unfortunate.
Well, how many times have you and I watched subcommittee and committee hearings in the Senate or in the Congress, and they start out with narcissistic, self-aggrandizing comments, and they just want to go in, make a lengthy statement. And the people that they call, that they say they want to interview, they really don't want to interview those people. They just want to use those people for as political pawns. They want to try to make a cheap political point at the expense of the person that they bring in. And they're not interested in any way, shape, or form what that person has to say. And did you notice that every time Bill Barr actually took a breath and got to say something, and he was making some very valid points, they shut him off?
Yes.
And they said, hey, this is my time, right? Well, it kind of reminds me, and maybe I just don't understand how Senate and congressional subcommittees are held, but believe me, I've given enough testimony in my life, and especially in depositions. And if you're the deponent, you're the person that gets to speak. The attorney asks you the question, but then they have to be quiet and they have to let you give a complete answer before they go to the next one. They are not allowed to interrupt you, or else there's an objection. Now, I understand that this is not a court process, but they're still taking a perjury oath and they're acting as if it's a court process, but it's just a sham.
I was just extremely insulted that the first thing is that they were talking about these peaceful protests. And Jim Jordan got up and he showed a video, which Nadler made sure to say that that was not supposed to be in the record, that he didn't have permission to show that video. But the video showed all of the violence all over the country for these peaceful protests. But they continued throughout the day to accuse Bill Barr of doing things such as bringing federal troops into places like Portland.
And they call them federal troops, and they're not federal troops.
To protect the courthouse. And they continue to say that that is so that Donald Trump could get footage for his TV commercials for his reelection. That is patently ridiculous. Bill Barr is a rule of law guy, and the rule of law is that that is their job, is to protect our federal courthouses. And that is exactly what they're doing. And by the way, in this peaceful protest, I believe it was in Portland, three federal officers were blinded last night.
By lasers.
By lasers. I mean, those
Which is a federal offense to point a laser at anybody, especially a law enforcement officer.
Those people should be in jail for many, many years.
Well, you know, some of the talking points that they're using are just leftist rhetoric to try to inflame the public. You know, one thing that they're doing is they're calling these federal officers shock troops, you know, Trump's troops. And the fact of the matter is they're civilian law enforcement people. That's what they are. They're not military people at all. You can't use the military, meaning the armed services, absent the National Guard for stuff like this. You just can't do it. But what's going on is a total misrepresentation of really what is happening in the United States with respect to what Mr. Barr would like to talk about. And that is the upheaval, the anarchy, the Marxism, the destruction of property, the destruction of federal buildings, of federal statues, of all sorts of things like this. And it is, as you indicated, Linda, it's the job of not only municipal law enforcement, but federal law enforcement to come in there and protect federal property. That's their job. And the mayors have been given more than adequate notice. The governors have been given more than adequate notice that if they could not quell the violence, then federal officers would have to come in and reassert some safety and security.
Well, sure. And they're under attack every single night. This is just, I mean, the whole thing around the country has gotten out of control, and it's gotten out of control in Democratic cities and cities that have had these problems for some time, and this is the end result of it. Bill Barr, in what he did get to say, I was very impressed. He, you know, pointed out, I mean, the amount of accusations against him was crazy about trying to help Trump. They just kept making it everything about helping Trump. And he very much said that, hey, you know, I'm 70 years old, I didn't need this job again. But I felt that there was enough issues happening in the country that were not being handled under the rule of law. And I'm a rule of law guy, and that's how I handle them, and I don't handle them with anybody else's input. I handle them by the rule of law. And I appreciate it. He really, you know, stuck to the things he wanted to say. But my point really is that if people would watch these things, and I know a lot of people don't have time in the daytime to watch these things, but the way that our Judiciary Committee treated the Attorney General of the United States was embarrassing, insulting, unnecessary, and despicable.
Well, I think you encapsulated how many people that I've been watching in various social media platforms are responding to the way that, you know, the members, the Democratic members of the House Judiciary Committee treated Mr. Barr. But really, it's no different than they've treated a lot of other witnesses that they call forward. And of course, you know, Barr knew that they were going to try to take a piece of him. They have been trying to do that for quite some time. And, you know, the truth be known, Bill Barr is a patriot. You know, I have so much respect for this guy. I personally think that he is the best attorney general that we have had in my lifetime. And I can name most of the attorney generals in the United States, you know, during that period of time. This guy is a solid fact-finding attorney. He's a great leader. He is articulate. He's to the point. And he gets business. He takes care of business. And Linda, they're just scared of him. And this whole thing was a political spectacle. This was all about Trump. They didn't want to hear about any of the pressing issues that the Department of Justice is involved right now in dealing with. And people have to remember that the Department of Justice is comprised of not only the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the U.S. Attorney's Office, but all of the law enforcement agencies that are federal law enforcement agencies go under the umbrella of the Department of Justice. And there's, like you said, all sorts of things going on in the country. There is chaos, there's anarchy, there's death, there's destruction, and there's complete disrespect to the American way of life. And I believe that the Democrats, in holding this hearing, they really harmed themselves because they showed their true colors, and people were just as frustrated as you and me.
Well, when you have these people on the Judiciary Committee cutting him off and not allowing him to say anything, and the comments that they make, there's Cedric Richmond of Louisiana, he was very rude about Attorney General Barr said and honored paid his respects to Lewis, who passed away, right? And he was a champion of civil rights, as he was. And this guy told him to keep his name out of his mouth. I mean, that's just so
disrespectful. Don't you think that that's a racist statement? Well, it's not only disrespectful, but it's racist. Okay? And all of this stuff, this posturing, this political posturing, needs to stop.
Well, and they said, this is a black congressman. He said that Attorney Barr was racist in the way that, you know, his staff doesn't have enough blacks. So, I mean, everybody has something to say, but nobody let William Barr say anything.
Well, you know what? I want to mention something. You know, if you looked at the amount of blacks that are on the Senate Judiciary, and do you know how many blacks are in the Congress, and do you know how many blacks are in the Senate? Okay? So when they talk about, you know, not having enough blacks, the United States Department of Justice proportionally has far more people of color working for it than the Senate or the Congress or the House Judiciary Committee. Okay, if you look at the racial makeup of the subcommittee, you can see that that guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, the other thing that Attorney General Barr mentioned was about this whole defunding the police and talking against the police, and he said that he does not believe that there is systemic racism in our law enforcement community. Do they need some things that would make them better? He said yes. But he pointed out, and I hope I have the figures right, but I know that 7,500 black citizens have been shot and killed, primarily shot and killed by other blacks in our country, where to date this year, only actually 9 blacks have been killed by officers and 11 whites.
Oh, you're getting into my area.
Oh, okay.
And I've got the stats.
Well, I mean, he mentioned it and my ears perked up.
Yeah.
And I would like to hear the stats from you.
Yeah.
Because 7,500 have been killed by other black people, and yet only 9, is it 9?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, that have been killed by officers. And these are unarmed men.
Okay, so, and I had a piece of paper that had all the stats on it, okay? because I was working on an article for America Out Loud, so I pulled the stats. But I'll give you just the roundabout stats. So, and what I did is I took 11 of the cities that are having the most problems with protesters and anarchy and Black Lives Matter and Antifa, okay? The ones that are, you know, the big 11. So we're talking about, you know, we're talking about New York City, and we're talking about Philadelphia and Baltimore and Chicago, Los Angeles, Milwaukee. I mean, there was just, you know, a number of them. Houston, a number of them. And what I found was, so far this year, there have been 2,300 homicides of people of color by people of color.
But he said 7,500.
Okay, wait a minute. That's
okay.
The entire United States.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Okay, I'm just talking about 11 cities. So,
okay.
So understand this, because I think my point is well taken and right on. So you're talking about the entire United States. I'm talking about only 11 cities, Linda. And by the way, the entire number of people that were killed by law enforcement in 2019, the entire number over the entire United States, of which twice as many whites were killed than blacks, amounted to slightly over 900 for the entire year over the entire United States. And so far this year, and we're not finished with July yet, they have killed in those cities 20 over, it was like 20, 2,024 people, in just of which over 75% of those people that were killed were people of color killing people of color. Okay?
And most of those with guns.
All of the ones I'm talking
Okay,
about
with
are with
guns.
guns. I only took the gun violence ones. So, what a false narrative that is.
Well, yes. And the interesting thing is that police killing unarmed suspects have killed more whites than
Twice
blacks.
as many.
Yeah.
Twice as
So.
many. And I go into that the whole statistical thing in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. And we'll tell people how to get that, later. But my point is, this is such a false narrative. The Black Lives Matter movement is such a false narrative. The Antifa movement is such a false narrative. Now, I completely disagree, as do many blacks and also conservative blacks, such as like Larry Elder, for instance. And the term that is being used is what I really disagree with. I don't disagree with the fact that we have racism in the United States. I disagree with the false narrative that the racism in the United States is systemic. And that means to me, I don't know what it means to you, but to me, systemic means in every segment of our society, in everything that we do, in education, in hospitalization, in the criminal justice system, in at the universities, at all the different in employment, all of the different things that comprise our society, you would have to believe that there's racism, I mean, significant racism in every one of those components. Do you agree with that? I certainly don't.
Well, I don't, and like I told you before, I hate that word systemic because I think it's the new buzzword and it's way overused
Absolutely.
and it's meaningless.
Absolutely.
So let me get you a cup of coffee and we have more to say.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.drronmartinelli.com. DrRonMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice. To let you off easy, and I went to ice water
Okay,
just because it's
that
hot
was
outside.
easy.
Yeah. Hey, listen, have you been catching the press conferences that are being held in Washington, D.C. by the group of board-certified medical physicians that are talking about how that they are being censored on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, and on social media platforms because they want to talk about hydroxychloroquine and the various remedies, alternative treatments that there are for the two stages of COVID, the beginning stage, and then once you're into COVID. Have you been catching that?
Well, somebody sent it to me actually today, and that was the first time that I've heard of it. I haven't really been watching the news too much, so I think it was That is really, really interesting that what they say is that the hydroxychloroquine is absolutely a lifesaver, and that if given early, people never make it to that stage two where then they might need a ventilator or additional remedies. And the fact that so many doctors are withholding this medication from people when it has been prescription medicine since the 1960s.
Oh, even, yes.
Before that, even.
For malaria.
Actually, all the way back to, I think, George Washington.
Well, he used quinine during those days for malaria.
It's a derivative of quinine.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's given to babies. It's given to elderly people. And there are basically no side effects. So why are we not giving it to every single person that starts to have symptoms before they get to that point of getting deathly ill?
Right. And there's people that are using it as a prophylactic, right? Just to prevent
President Trump did.
Absolutely. So here's what they're concerned about. And what I thought was very, very interesting about this is that it was a broad base of board-certified physicians.
Yes.
They were at all different types of medical specialties. They, you know, emergency room people, virologists, there were neurologists. There were just a whole bunch of different people that have to work with patients with COVID symptoms.
Yes.
And they are saying that they are seeing amazing success with their patients. And they are being systemically silenced. And the thing that they're really arguing about and they're arguing for is to stop the government from preventing them and other physicians like them for prescribing hydroxychloroquine, which is a prescription drug.
Do you understand, because I do not, who in our government is forbidding them from prescribing this?
Well, I think the FDA is doing this. And what happened is that there was an article that came out in Lancet. Now, I don't know if you know what Lancet is.
No.
But it's probably the second most prestigious medical journal in the world. And it comes from England. So, you know, we have the American Medical Association and the Journal of Medical Sciences. And then you've got, you know, you got Lancet. And this is where very scholarly research is found, okay? And everybody wants to be published in those different periodicals. Well, anyway, somebody came out with a falsified study on hydroxychloroquine, and that captured the attention of the CDC and the FDA, and they had put pressure so that physicians would have problems prescribing that medication for their patients. And so that's really held things back. And what I thought was really interesting is these physicians were from all over the United States, and they came from different backgrounds. You know, one of the people that I thought was most interesting, who I really thought had a tremendous experiential portfolio, was a African Nigerian female physician. And I don't know what city she's from, but it doesn't matter. And she said, you know, in my own country of Nigeria, we have remarkable success. And we treat babies, like you said, we treat babies, we treat the elderly, we use it as a prophylactic. You know, it's just very, very common in our country. And to come here to the United States and see that there is this controversy that shouldn't even exist is both remarkable and depressing.
See, I'm wondering if this is not from Dr. Fauci, if he's the one that's preventing it. I because you can go on the CDC site and see that it's safe and see that there's no contradictions to using it.
Right.
So why are we not using it? And, you know, this is very personal to us because we have a friend who got COVID and who asked for hydroxychloroquine and was not allowed to have it. And he was a veteran and he asked for it through the Veterans Hospital. And that's really, really disappointing. And he went needlessly through
A lot of suffering.
A lot of suffering.
Yeah.
Because of that. And that's just not, it's not right. And you know, if you remember when President Trump became president, one of the things that he did, one of the early things that he did, was he made that new law that people have the right to try different things that are unproven. And now this is a proven drug, but if you can't even try a proven drug, but you can try unproven things, you have the right to try to save your own life, and we are not being given that right. And I did look at these doctors, and they speak very eloquently, and they seem to know exactly what they're talking about, that this really works. So the question is, when we have over 600,000 doses of this in our country?
Oh, no, we have, no. In our
600 million doses?
No, in our emergency reserves, on our strategic emergency reserves, we have 63 million doses.
Okay, so six something.
Of hydroxychloroquine.
Okay, so that's enough to treat everybody with COVID. Everybody. So why
a couple of times over.
Why are we not doing this so that we can all get back to our lives?
Right.
Because people are losing their businesses and their livelihoods every single day.
Well, and I think the easy answer is, and I don't purport that this entire thing is easy, but I think there's an easy answer on my side of it, the way I look at it, is that they have politicized the pandemic, and that's what the doctors are saying. And I completely agree with this group of physicians, and it's not the first time that they have scheduled a press conference. And by the way, the press conferences are deliberately being sparsely attended because they are reaching out to all the major national and international news sources, and those news sources are deliberately staying away from this.
And
you'd have to ask yourself, why is that? If everybody is interested in, you know, putting a stop to this COVID disease.
Because, you know, I mean, if you want to say it right out loud, because they would rather see us die from COVID and see us die in these riots than fix it, because they're afraid that Trump will win the presidency. And if they can continue to make him look bad every way that they can, I just don't understand this. And what I also don't understand is, when we all have the right, the First Amendment right, and yet all the places that you mentioned, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, who else?
No, actually LinkedIn is doing a really good job.
Because
I watched the press conference on LinkedIn.
Okay, very good.
So no, it's Facebook, it's Twitter, and it's
Google.
Who else? Oh, YouTube.
Oh, YouTube.
That's
yeah.
it, YouTube.
Okay.
They took their sites down, yeah, as a matter of fact.
And why would they do that? I mean, why are we not allowed to hear a different view about
right.
what could save our lives?
And you know, these doctors are so transparent, and how you can tell that they're transparent, besides just listening to them speak and how eloquent they are and how experienced they are, but they say, look, they took our site down, but there's other sites that you can go to, like the CDC. So just go to the CDC site and look up hydroxychloroquine and the research that they're doing, and you can read all about how successful that drug is.
Yes, and they said that they will be out there every day en masse to keep telling the American people, because they just feel that what's happening is wrong and that we need to know. I want to know why, because I know that President Trump was a big supporter of hydroxychloroquine. Why are we not being able to use it?
Yeah, well, I think it's because they politicized the whole thing.
Hey, so talking about coronavirus and this, the whole school problem, you know, the whole issue about, are we going to go back to school? Are we not going to go back to school? Some people are giving all kinds of alternatives. Well, some families, God bless them, have come up with their own ideas, and I love it. What they've done is they call these micro schools. And what's a micro school? A micro school is where a family gets together with a couple other, three, four other families that have kids of like age, and they make a little school, so there might be three, four, five, six kids, and one of the parents uses their house, And a teacher, an actual teacher, comes in and teaches them all day just as they would at school, but they're micro schools.
So in other words, a licensed educator comes
yes,
in.
Yes, and follows the curriculum, which I want to talk about in a second. But the parents will pay, chip in for that teacher's salary. And although you say that, well, maybe, you know, that's going to be expensive, a lot of people can't afford that, I don't disagree. But again, people that have to go to work, that have to pay a babysitter, basically they're going to be paying about the same as they would a babysitter. So what I like about this, obviously, is I think that the kids will get a much better education, and they get some socializing, and they get their curriculum from somebody who knows how to teach. What I'd like to see different is I'd like to take that opportunity in micro schools to change the curriculum enough so that we are back to basics and we're not teaching all the crazy things that
revisionist history,
Muslim studies, LGBTQ, all that type of stuff, and get back to basics and teach our kids what they need to know to succeed in life. So I just think that's a great idea. I would absolutely do that. And now that we're going to be grandparents, maybe at some point we'll have an opportunity to do that.
Well, I am a licensed educator, right?
That's right.
So I will take over the homeschooling of the grandkids.
Oh, I got to see this. We're going to give them to you starting about 3 years old and see how you do.
But you know what? This is a great idea on many different levels. And for all the reasons that you said, and one of the things that I want to add is usually the average number of kids that are in a classroom can be anywhere from, and at the lower ages can be anywhere from, 25 to 30 kids in a classroom. And of course, you have to divide the way that you teach, and you have to, modify the way that you teach depending on the student's ability to learn. And of course, kids have all different learning levels, when the light comes on and when they can accept and understand, comprehend, and regurgitate the education that they're receiving. So when you talk about being in a class with 30 people, as opposed to being in a class that's got 4 to 6 people, the learning curve goes way up. All right.
Sure.
So boy, I'll tell you what, money well spent. And you brought up the thing about, well, how much would it cost if they were hiring a babysitter? So I think is there going to be an expense? Yeah, but it may not be all that expensive when you consider how much farther along the kids are going to be than their peers. You understand what I'm saying?
I do. And, we already have the naysayers coming out of the woodwork that are saying that, oh, only privileged people are going to get to do this. And, this isn't fair to everybody else. And the lower income people can't afford this. Well, in fact, there are lower income people doing this in their own ways. So, just as a parent, I would just say, get out of my life and mind your business. Then they talk about that the schools will lose money because that child is not in the schools. I don't really care.
Well, and I think
the schools do a terrible job.
Great point with the ADA, the average daily attendance money. And, so then it's not about the kids. It's about the infrastructure for the school.
Right.
Right. Which is what? Salaries and pensions. Salaries
right.
and pensions.
Right. And union dues.
And union dues.
All
right.
those things. Sure.
So, no, I think you've made a couple of really good points with regard to that. I'll tell you what. If we were in that situation and we had kids of that age, I would definitely do the same thing.
As I said before, with the whole COVID issue, this has really gone on a lot longer than we all expected. And it's really hurting so many people in so many different ways. There's mental health issues. There's child abuse issues. There are definitely financial issues. There are businesses closing. It seems that it's gone up over the whole country in numbers. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that it's because of all the protests. I really do. You know, I'm look at the way these people are congregating, and not all of them are wearing masks. And even if they're wearing masks, they're still congregating. They're still touching each other. They're in close proximity. By the way, you know, we've introduced chemical agents. People are coughing. They're sneezing.
Oh, absolutely.
They're runny noses. I mean, come on. And these people are mingling with each other. And I tell you, Linda, I think a lot of it has to do with the protest. The next thing is, I am a believer that these numbers are really not as great as the numbers are. Where is the vetting process with these numbers? And we have heard time and time again how they're double counting, or there are false positives. You know, there's all sorts of problems. And of course, what we've been talking about, the politicization of the pandemic. Now, I am not trying to mitigate the seriousness of COVID whatsoever. Okay, we are definitely climbing, but I think that there are other reasons for it.
Well, it seems to be climbing all over the world, not just in the U.S. So if we have had an increase by 1 million people around the world in 4 days, how is that possible?
Well, I don't know. I'm not a physician. You know, one of the things that I wanted to do, but I've been so busy that I haven't been able to do it. You remember how I talked about, I wanted to, like, you remember when I was talking about these 11 cities?
Yes.
Okay. And we're talking about the gun violence in 11 cities. I'd like to plot out maybe 20 cities, maybe more, that are having all these riots and these protests. And then I'd like to take a look at the county statistics of the rise in COVID cases and see if there's some correlation, as opposed to other areas that surround these particular cities and counties that their numbers have not climbed so much.
And there are some areas that have virtually none, which is so interesting.
Right. And don't forget, and I'm kind of stuck on the issue of the protests, but a lot of these people that are involved in the protests in these different cities do not live in those cities. They are traveling to those cities.
And they go to other cities from there.
And then they go back to the cities. Do you understand what
yes.
I mean?
Yep.
And so I'll tell you what, I think there's a correlation there.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, I'm back with the ice water.
Okay. And there's so much to talk about today, I don't even know where to start.
Well, I do. So, did you hear that in Milwaukee, which is where the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, is going to hold their big convention in Milwaukee, and I believe the dates are August 17th through the 20th, where Joe Biden is going to be nominated as the presidential candidate. 2 weeks before that, he's going to, you know, choose his vice presidential running mate, and I want to talk with you about that as a separate issue. But of course, you can't have a big convention like that in a major city without having a law enforcement presence. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree.
And you remember, because we're both on the job, that cities have mutual assistance agreements with other cities and other jurisdictions, right? Los Angeles had them, San Jose had them, every city has them, in case the poop hits the blower and you need a lot of police to help you come in. And if you remember, during the 2016 election, I was doing work for Fox News at the time, and remember, I went back to Cleveland. and to cover Black Lives Matter and their threat to, you know, take over the convention and to cause chaos, and that never occurred. Well, it never occurred because of the mutual assistance pacts that the city of Cleveland had with maybe 100 or more other law enforcement agencies.
And you know who else was there? Was the Trump motorcycle guys.
Yeah. The Trump Rolling Thunder guys.
Kept people in line.
Yeah. But you, would you agree with me that you got to have that?
Absolutely.
Right? Mutual assistance, you got to have it. Well, here's a problem, Linda. Because over 100 law enforcement agencies in the state of Wisconsin that surround Milwaukee have said, we're pulling out. We're not coming.
Good.
And they have gone sideways on their mutual assistance pact.
Well, because Joe Biden and the Democrats have gone sideways on them.
Well, that's true. Here's the major problem that these more than 100 agencies have. The city of Milwaukee is restricting law enforcement agencies in the city of Milwaukee. So obviously there's their police department, their sheriff's office, and any city that would come in as to offer mutual assistance, restricting them severely on riot control devices.
Yeah.
Right? So can't use the less lethal, you can't use the, which is the chemical agents, you can't use the pepper balls, the rubber bullets, the flashbang grenades, you know, stuff like that. And I don't know if they can use riot gear or not, but for sure they are severely restricting the weaponry, the defensive weaponry. And so they're not coming.
Well, if you just look at this week, in one night in Portland, 59 officers were hurt and 3 blinded.
Right.
So, you know, I don't blame them. And I don't know what people expect from police officers. The false narrative about police officers being racist and police brutality, again, we've always said that there's exceptions to every rule, but the vast, vast majority are good men and women from the communities in which they live, and they are being treated like garbage, and they need to stand up for themselves. And people need to really, unfortunately, face the consequences of the people that they vote in and their actions, and maybe they will learn to vote better and to think about who you're voting for. The majority of Americans, according to Rasmussen, do not want police defunded and do not want police to, you know, lessen their roles. They are thinking that police may be too harsh because that's what they're told. But most people really don't know that. And if they were given the statistics that are true, then, you know, their opinion would be different. That being said, police have the right to
defend themselves.
Sure, absolutely. They are just people like everybody else with families and kids and grandparents. And, you know, you can't do this to people.
I think the statistics, and, you know, I follow these statistics all the time, on violence against officers, officers that are murdered, officers that are seriously injured, officers that are assaulted by bad guys. You know, I try to keep up with that stuff all the time. And on average, historically, at least for the last 10 years, an average, a stunning average of about 57 to 59,000 officers are injured every year, okay, or assaulted every year. And of course, in my Black Lives Matter book, I talk about how many police officers are killed every single year. And the first year that book came out, we had the highest number of police officers shot and killed since 1974, and before that, about 1933 during the Bonnie and Clyde years. So just, I think the statistics on the officers injured are going to go way up. So far this year, as far as officers killed, we're above where we were last year, by about 4%. But I'm anticipating that those numbers are going to go up. And I said that the year that I wrote Black Lives Matter book, and it went right through the roof. And I believe that this is another year like that. And the reason I believe that is there's just more violence than there was, you know, in 2016, 2017.
Yeah.
As a result of the, you know, Michael Brown situation and, you know, hands up, don't shoot.
Well, and now you have the George Floyd situation. So in Minneapolis, where they had voted to permanently cut the police department's budget by $10 million, and they put a hiring freeze in place so that, you know, before they dismantle the entire department, which will happen next May, you know, they've got all of these stopgap measures. Okay, they have had a huge spike in crime there.
Oh, yeah.
And people, residents, are now forming armed patrol groups on their own. Is this what we want in America?
Well, you know, in the article, and I hope people go on to America Out Loud. We're going to talk a little bit about that towards the end of our conversation. But there are so many really great articles on America Out Loud. And one of the articles there is one that I wrote a couple of weeks ago. And I hope people will go back to America Out Loud and pull that article down out of the Dr. Round Martinelli, you know, columns, and it's called The Disunited States of America. And I said exactly that. I prophesize, and I continue to do that, that if we don't take care of business and support our police, and if this defunding continues, and we have a Marxist regime, a progressive Marxist regime take over in November, believe me, you're gonna find that people are gonna take matters into their own hands. And as we speak right now, the sales of guns and ammunition is through the roof. And you know, we've got our Street Safe Defense Firearms Training Company in California, and we were just advised by the Riverside County Gun Owners Association that they had 2,000 people during the month of July alone put in for CCW permits. And that's because crime is off the charts right now. And you know, Linda, we were talking about those 11 cities and about the gun violence deaths, and the percentage of increase in shootings and in gun-related homicides is significantly up in some of these cities. They're in not only way into the double digits, but into triple digits.
Oh, they are. Well, let's just go back to...
I mean, huge triple digits.
To Minneapolis, where in July, there have been 43 shootings. That was in the first half. So July 1st to 15th, 43 shootings, where last year they had 29 in the entire month. So you can see that if you extrapolate that, that would be 29 to 86, okay? And they've had so many buildings damaged, vandalized, burned, including the police precinct there. I don't know if that city's going to get back to any kind of normalcy anytime soon, because people can't just necessarily afford to rebuild, and wouldn't want to, maybe because they're afraid of their businesses being damaged. But this is happening probably in all of your 11 cities. The same thing in Atlanta, Georgia, seen a huge rise in shootings and homicides this year, 265%, Ron.
Oh, yeah, and that's one of the high triple digits, and that was one of the cities I looked at Atlanta. So I'm glad you brought that up, and darn it, I wish I could find that darn page that I had all my statistics, because it'd be a great time to talk about them. But I think people understand what we're talking about. The confluence of Black Lives Matter, of Antifa, of anarchists, of defunding, the increase, the release, the zero bail releasing, the letting tens of thousands of violent inmates out of jails and prisons so that they don't catch COVID.
Yeah, absolutely unfair to the public. Ridiculous, and there's no words. There's no words for that. I'm going to say another one. New York City. Number of shootings increased by 130% in June. look at these numbers. These are not like they increased by a few percent. These are huge numbers.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you want to defund the police. You want to take their tools away from them that keep them and the public safe. What do you expect? In Los Angeles, the homicide rate rose 250% in Los Angeles.
You know, last year, it's funny, LA was one of the cities that I was looking at, and I couldn't get the current homicide figures, but I got last year's homicide figures, and they said already they are on a trajectory to clearly overshadow that. And so last year in the city of Los Angeles, and I'm just talking gun violent deaths, Linda, just guns, 537 homicides last year in the city of Los Angeles, Los Angeles County, beg your pardon. That's a hell of a lot of gun violence homicides. Can you imagine how many people were wounded?
Well, and shooting victims rose by 56% in the first week, just in the first week of June.
Yeah.
So another thing that Los Angeles did, though, have to give them a little bit of credit, that they set a curfew and they arrested those who violated it, and they deployed the National Guard there.
Yeah. And you need to do that because people are getting crazy. Now, the chief of police in Dallas, Texas, who happens to be a black female, and I believe she used to be the chief of police in Detroit, Michigan. So, boy, what a culture change going from Detroit to coming down south and becoming the chief of police in Dallas. Apparently, she's not fooling around, because when they had protesters come on that bridge, you know, when you go up into Dallas, you know, there's that big, that goes over the floodplain or whatever, that big giant bridge. Well, the protesters were going on that bridge. She said, everybody that blocks traffic, I'm going to arrest. She wasn't kidding. She arrested over 700. Her police department arrested over 700. But then one of the problems is that the courts let all these people out on the zero bail. And what do you think they do? They go right back out there and they reattack the public and they reattack the police.
Right. Well, let me give you another one. Of course, Chicago, which we talk about all the time. Chicago, you know, it's almost hard to get a 250% increase there, and we don't have that because they're so violent all the time. But their murders have increased by 34% and shootings by 45%. What's interesting, Lori Lightfoot, their mayor, has been not wanting to have the president send federal troops in there to help.
Well, you mean federal officers.
Federal officers in there to help. But she was heard saying, calling the city effing lawless, and said that hundreds of places were looted in just one day. And then the alderman, Susan Sadlowski Garza, said that her ward is a shit show. So,
Can we say that?
Yeah. Well,
can we say that on the air?
I just did. But I'm just repeating. I mean, I'm not making it up. I'm just repeating what they said. So then you have Seattle, Washington, which of course is another place that we had the Chaz area. And they had a 525% increase in crime.
Well, you know, it's ridiculous. And officers are bailing out of those cities left and right. They're taking their retirement. Officers are under so much stress right now. You know, and here's a tragic thing. You know, we were talking about Chicago just a minute ago. A black deputy chief that just got promoted, and he had come from the South Side Chicago Division, which is, of course, we know where, you know, 95% of all the gun violence injuries and homicides come from. He just got promoted just 2 weeks ago, committed suicide.
Oh no.
At the command center just yesterday.
Oh no.
Yeah, shot himself, killed himself in at the police department.
Well, they're under a horrible amount of stress. This is so unfair to do to these people and their families. There was a really funny I don't know where it was, on social media, I guess. The police chief in Florida who...
Was that Polk County?
Polk County.
Was it? Oh, my God, it was phenomenal.
Who basically said, don't be coming here and doing this stuff because we're not going to put up with it. And, you know, he would deputize any...
Law-abiding citizen that had a gun.
Yes, exactly, that had a gun. And they would all, you know, be deputies. And he said, if you try to break in somebody's house, I'm going to tell them to blow you right back out the door.
Oh, I'll tell you
so
what.
I thought that was pretty good.
Well, I saw the video and it was really cool because he had his entire sheriff's department behind him. And by the way, the sheriff in Polk County is a black guy. So they are not fooling around. And you saw what they did in Boise, where they have actually a civilian militia because they heard Antifa was coming into town and Antifa was going to cause some problems. And I saw plenty of videos where they armed, you know, everybody was armed. And I'm talking about people of all different colors that live in Boise, Idaho, were strapped and walking down the street. And a few Antifa members tried to come into that town, and they ran those guys out of town almost on a rail. It was a huge wake-up call for them. So I don't think you're going to see any problems in Boise. But you got to make a statement like that.
What happened in Austin when somebody decided to point a gun at somebody.
Oh, yeah. And you know what's interesting about that is just about 5 minutes before he was shot and killed, he was being interviewed, and I saw the interview. I watched it just yesterday, and he was being pretty threatening. And he said, you know, people here are just a bunch of pussies, and they don't know what to do with the guy with the gun. And so some poor schmuck is driving through the downtown area, and they block his vehicle, and they're banging on his vehicle. And then this particular guy with the AK-47 strapped to his chest, and this is my understanding based on the news reports, started aggressing on that car, and the poor guy inside the car, you know, what do you think he's thinking? He sees this guy coming at him carrying a gun, and he fired on the guy with the AK-47 and dropped him right there, DOA.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, don't mess with Texas because everybody's armed.
Well, see, people are stupid when they do stuff like that, and they need to remember that people are scared. And all of a sudden, if you attack somebody that's in their car, especially if they were to have, you know, their family members in there, their children in there, they don't know what you're going to do. They're going to obviously think the worst if you surround the car and you're beating on the windows. And then all of a sudden, and this is a hypothetical, right? I'm not saying that this happened in this particular instance, but then all of a sudden, you know, people are coming at you with guns. I'll tell you what, I'm going to do what I need to do to defend myself and my family. Well, you ready to call a night?
I am.
All right.